Right, a very good morning to you. How you doing? Sunday morning it is. You know that, you didn't need me to tell you. It's another lovely morning here in Salford, the great city of Salford. Although it might not be as nice as it's been in the last couple of days. We might get a bit of rain later on. Otherwise, though, things are good. I hope you're in fine fettle yourself and that you're having some sort of a good weekend. This is Sunday View, so we're going to have a listen into some of the Sunday morning talk shows, and we'll look at one or two articles in the newspapers as well. Let's do it then. As usual, you can tweet me. My Twitter handle never changes. It's at Richie Allen Show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, I'm in good form myself. It's been a pretty relaxing weekend so far for the BBG. Yes, it's been pretty good. Right, all right then. I don't know how we're going to do time-wise. We'll just crack on with it and see how we get on. I will read the tweets as we go along. I'll be a bit better with reading the tweets. Good morning to Stuart. Good morning to the Charlie girl there. Good morning, Charlie girl. Good morning to Liz and to Lord Sugar's hairy twin, otherwise known as Sean. How you doing, mate? Hi to M&M who, as well, who says, Richie, maybe there are people who listen to your show in the Netherlands. There are, I can tell you that. I can tell you that. We get a very good breakdown of where people connect from, you know, so it's pretty much around about 240 countries around. I'm not saying that there are thousands of listeners in 240 countries. There are tens of thousands of listeners in the UK, tens of thousands in Ireland, tens of thousands in the United States, and then it's scattered around then the world. But yes, we do have listeners in Holland for sure. Oh, for sure. To be sure. April 26th it is, then we'll be into May next week, eh? Hey, and it's a virus, schmirus in the newspapers. Not too much point in going through all of the front pages, but we'll do the broadsheets, will we? Sunday Telegraph, the headline is, 2 weeks quarantine if travelling to the UK. Also, tests for anyone traced to known carrier. And the paper also leads with a story about the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, who's apparently raring to go after his brush with death, apparently. Yes, yes. Sunday Times leads with Tory grandees tell PM it's time to ease the lockdown. That story is fairly self-explanatory. A lot of more senior Conservative Party MPs and peers are apparently trying to put pressure on Boris Johnson to ease the lockdown for fears of the damage it's doing to people's livelihoods and people's future. Yes. Also on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph, of the Sunday Times, excuse me, is this. Patel warns of higher fines as public tire of the lockdown. Yes, Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, warning that the fines for being caught outside with no good reason will increase because, well, too many of us just won't do what we're bloody well told. I went to a shop yesterday. Ah, go on. I went to Home Bargains, which is near Eccles. I drove over there. And when I got there in mid-morning, there was a fairly big queue there. But what was nice about the queue was people were just talking to one another and they weren't really observing the 2 metres now. They weren't, I have to tell you. And that was good. And it seems there was a lot more traffic around yesterday. That was good. And there are more and more people in the parks as well. And that's good as well. In my opinion now, don't you know. The Mail on Sunday, headline, scientists hail game-changing immunity test. This is a report that ministers have ordered the production of up to 50 million so-called game-changing immunity tests. The Mail on Sunday says a breakthrough by British scientists means that people could be able to reliably test whether they have developed immunity to the virus by June. Isn't that funny? because at the same time, don't you know, the World Health Organization has said again over the weekend that they believe that people might be able to get the virus again and again and again and again, and that we might not have immunity, or it mightn't last very long. How nice and convenient. How nice and convenient. Here's a bit of conditioning for you. What do you mean, you big baldy bollocks? Well, I'll tell you what I mean. Conditioning is a noun. The word conditioning is a noun. The process of training or accustoming a person or animal to behave in a certain way or to accept certain circumstances. Yes, conditioning. Social conditioning. Here's a lovely story doing the rounds this morning. Coronavirus, says the BBC. Military to test key workers in mobile units. Yes, the military is going to be going around the country. And while the story says initially to get key workers tested, ultimately they want the military to go around the country to housing estates like the one I live on, to villages and towns with their military uniforms on, and get people to line up to be tested. Conditioning. I've been arguing this for years. Conditioning. Getting from the community the response they want, the change in behaviour, an acceptance of people that this is the way it's going to be. Conditioning. Isn't it wonderful, eh? Eh? Oh, no. Here's Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday. Let me read a little bit of this. Peter Hitchens. We will all be permanently less free and permanently poorer. And that will, of course, include the sacred NHS, which the nation love bombs every Thursday night, but which is already so threadbare that it cannot properly equip its doctors and nurses. Just wait and see how much worse this gets in the coming era of post-shutdown austerity, writes Hitchens. Not to mention all the various zealots and fanatics who already see this new world as an opportunity to impose their various dogmas and fads on us. I won't dwell yet again on the damage the government has already done and which deepens every day. I only say that without serious and angry opposition, this will only get worse. This clueless cabinet is motivated only by fear. They cannot admit they gravely overestimated the danger of the virus and gravely underestimated the damage they would do the economy. Please write to your MPs now, says Peter, reminding them that they were elected to put your case to the government, not the other way around. And he goes on to say, congratulations to the Cambridge Union, which on Thursday night held the first proper two-sided debate on whether shutting the country is the right response to COVID-19, so shaming Parliament and the BBC, which have yet to do so. Yes, of course, the BBC hasn't attempted to present a debate on whether the lockdown was the right or appropriate measure to this alleged virus. The BBC is cheerleading it. And I want to play you right now, if you'll bear with me, the opening remarks of Andrew Marr. Now, Andrew Marr is one of the BBC's most senior presenters, and he hosts the flagship Marr Show every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. on BBC One, don't you know? And here are his opening remarks this morning, talking about the conditioning and the lack of journalism, and the lack of debate. Andrew Marr.
Good morning. Let's talk about a different Britain, the unfamiliar country that's going to emerge when this lockdown begins to end. There will be no going back to normal. But as Boris Johnson returns to work this week, he is under pressure to ease restrictions from all sides. Now, we've hit 20,000 hospital deaths. This is an excruciatingly difficult decision. The Britain that is coming will mean we all have to work and live in different ways. The trouble is, so far, the government hasn't begun to spell out what this new country will look like. And the sooner we start to have a grown-up conversation about that, the better the future may be.
La, la. Right, there's Andrew Marr. You would imagine Andrew Marr's job is it's hardly to tell you that the world you knew is gone, right? The world you knew is gone, and we will all have to adjust to a new Britain. But that's what he did. Surely that isn't his job. Surely, stop calling me Shirley. Surely it's his job to demand of his guests the hard evidence that changing our world is necessary to begin with. That's what Peter Hitchens, I think, means in his excellent piece in the Mail on Sunday. It's hard to explain to you how I feel about this, as somebody who is a radio presenter and has done this job at all the levels, really, and produced as well radio at all the levels. It's mad. It's a mad time to be alive. Presenters of so-called journalistic mid-morning talk programmes, they're surely to say to these guys, hammer them, to robustly hammer them for the evidence that we need to change the way we live forever. No, they open their programmes now telling you the Britain you knew is gone. That's the BBC, the British Bullshit Corporation. Horse manure everywhere. Have a listen to this. This is important. I flagged this up a bit earlier on Twitter. I said you won't believe your effing ears. But I'm so glad that I was able to catch this morning. Rosanna Allen Cann is a Labour Member of Parliament and a doctor. Now, she isn't the first doctor to enter politics. Although, strangely, nobody ever asks general practitioners, particularly younger ones like Allen Cann, why are you an MP, love? Why go through med school to become a doctor and then to become an MP? Why did you do that? It's a question they're rarely, if ever, asked. Anyway, Rosanna Allen Cann, MP and GP, is Labour's Shadow Minister for Mental Health. Now, she's a GP, not a psychiatrist, but anyway. This might be the most important thing you hear today. And it's the reason. I'm not grandstanding now. I'm not important. I'm a big, ignorant, baldy gammon of a bollocks. And you know that. But the reason this show exists is for the next 5 minutes. She went on the Sophie Ridge show this morning. And here is the very first question put to her by Sophie Ridge.
I know you've been doing some shifts in the Nightingale Hospital in London. What's the situation been like most recently?
Right. You've been doing some shifts in the Nightingale Hospital in London. What's the situation been like recently? Labour MP Rosanna Allen Cann, feast your ears.
The staff there are absolutely incredible and are a committed team. And this week on my shift, I was working with the family support liaison team. And it really gave me the insight to see how this virus has been stripping families of the ability to grieve, of humanity. And the setup that they have at the Nightingale is phenomenal. We spend the day phoning patients' families, and I've been a doctor for many years, but there is nothing more heartbreaking than delivering the very worst of news over the phone. And on some occasions, we are able to bring a family member through to say goodbye, but we're only allowed to bring one person in. And imagine now for a family having to decide who is that individual that is able to go in and say goodbye, accompanied by a member of the team like myself. That is a crippling decision to make. And I found myself coming home heartbroken and asking myself, how much of this could have been avoided?
You did hear it, didn't you? Shall we hear it again? But the salient bit.
The setup that they have at the Nightingale is phenomenal. We spend the day phoning patients' families, and I've been a doctor for many years, but there is nothing more heartbreaking than delivering the very worst of news over the phone.
What kind of fuckery is this?
The first question asked by Ridge.
I know you've been doing some shifts in the Nightingale Hospital in London. What's the situation been like most recently?
The answer?
The setup that they have at the Nightingale is phenomenal. We spend the day phoning patients' families, and I've been a doctor for many years, but there is nothing more heartbreaking than delivering the very worst of news over the phone.
You've just heard a lie so massive and so outrageous that it should be the end of Rosanna Allen Khan's medical, political and professional career. The Nightingale Hospital in London is empty. The Nightingale Hospital in Manchester, at Manchester Central, is empty. And in a tidal wave of bullshit, Rosanna Allen Khan said that when she is at the Nightingale, she spends the day phoning people from the Nightingale, telling them their loved ones have died. Not treating people, making phone calls. This is breathtaking in its mendacity.
The setup that they have at the Nightingale is phenomenal. We spend the day phoning patients' families, and I've been a doctor for many years, but there is nothing more heartbreaking than delivering the very worst of news over the phone.
Wow. Jimmy?
She's lying.
What was that?
She's lying.
She's lying. What do you do with that? What do you do with that? After a bit of farting around where Allen Khan blamed the Conservative Party and the government for not being prepared, and after she bitched a bit about masks and personal protective equipment, Ridge, God help her, actually does her feckin' job and brings the chat back to the Nightingale. Yeah.
Cases have started to come down according to the official figures. I just wonder if that's been your experience working in A&E on the front line. I mean, there have been reports as well that the Nightingale Hospital in London has been largely empty.
There's reports that the Nightingale Hospital in London is largely empty. Wait until you hear the sharp intake of breath by Rosanna Allen Khan.
Reports as well that the Nightingale Hospital in London has been largely empty.
Shit.
Look, I've been working at St George's in Tooting. That's where I work in the A&E.
I've been working at St George's in Tooting. That's where I work in the A&E.
Girl, obviously, it's an intensive care setup. But in...
What?
Look, I've been working at St George's in Tooting. That's where I work in the A&E. In the Nightingale, obviously, it's an intensive care setup. But in the A&E departments, my colleagues and I have been finding that the number of patients, worryingly, is going down for other illnesses. My plea to anybody watching your show today, Sophie, would be...
Oh, let's swerve away from the fact that the Nightingale Hospital is empty and that you are not spending your days there phoning people and telling them their loved ones have died. Let's swerve and start talking about the fact that people are not coming to A&E with other problems because they are worried about the virus. A lie so monstrous, so outrageous, so mendacious that it should be the end of Rosanna Allen Khan. Never has a chance been served up to a television presenter as it was served up to Sophie Ridge. You want to make your career, Blondie? Dear Sophie, take her to the fucking cleaners. Lying. Lying about making phone calls to people, consoling them. Imagine it, imagine it. Hello, this is Rosanna Allen Khan, MP. I'm working in the Nightingale Hospital. I just thought I'd take the time to phone you to tell you that your husband Billy has passed away. It's disgusting. Disgusting. And here she swerves the massive, massive gaping hole in the ground she's about to fall into by swerving to talk about the fact that people won't go to A&E.
It would be if you have chest pain, if your child is ill, if you are worried that someone you love have got symptoms of a stroke, please, please go to the emergency department. We are ready and waiting for you. We don't want to see...
Blah, 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 blah. Please go to A&E. At this stage, Sophie Richards say, stop there a second. Ms. Allen Khan or Dr. fucking Allen Khan. Stop. Stop. Let's rewind a bit. Let's rewind a bit. Let's go back to where you told me that you spend your days at the Nightingale Hospital in London, which is empty, phoning people to tell them their loved ones died. And when I pointed out to you that the hospital is pretty much empty, you swerved the question. Have you come onto my programme this morning and dropped a whopper of a lie on my audience? And if so, why? Why are you lying? She lets a rabbit on and rabbit on.
A rise in deaths come out of those people who were too afraid to go to hospital because they were worried about contracting COVID-19.
Yeah, there's certainly been some concerning reports about cancer treatment being delayed, A&E attendance dropping. Do you think at some point there might be a tipping point where actually there is a risk of more deaths effectively being caused by the lockdown than by coronavirus?
Sophie Ridge is about as useful as tits on a bull. Fucking useless. A shadow government minister has come onto your programme and told a story, a pile of horse manure so fucking big you could stack it 1,000 feet high. And when caught in her lies, she starts running away, trying to change the context of the conversation. And you just sit there and allow her away with it. It's shocking. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I fantasize about the past. Maybe I think too fondly of the past. But I know the presenters that I produced would have taken her to the fucking cleaners and would have ended her career on national television. I couldn't believe that this morning. I mean, come on. I've trained for City and Guilds. I've trained presenters. I have. And I had some right fucking idiots in my classes. But they would never have missed that. Never in a million years. That's an open goal, that. That's beautiful. It's beautiful when that happens. It doesn't happen very often. I spend my days at Nightingale Hospital phoning people to tell them their loved ones have died. But the hospital's empty, love. Ah, go and fuck your... Just fuck off, you know. Fuck right off. Here's a tune. Sunday View with Richie Allen, the BBG, not the BBC for sure. Go on then. Go on. It's too important. Let's hear it in sequence. In sequence.
I know you've been doing some shifts in the Nightingale Hospital in London. What's the situation been like most recently?
Yeah.
The setup that they have at the Nightingale is phenomenal. We spend the day phoning patients' families, and I've been a doctor for many years, but there is nothing more heartbreaking than delivering the very worst of news over the phone.
Cases have started to come down according to the official figures. I just wonder if that's been your experience working in A&E on the front line. I mean, there have been reports as well that the Nightingale Hospital in London has been largely empty.
Look,
yeah, lovely. Let's move on. Dominic Raab has been sitting in for Boris Johnson, hasn't he? Raab is the Foreign Secretary, but he's been doing Johnson's gig while Johnson has been away. Apparently Johnson is back and raring to go and will be in Downing Street tomorrow chairing meetings, apparently. So Johnson will be back and Raab can return to his Foreign Secretary duties. Raab was also on the Sophie Ridge programme. I'm sticking with Ridge this morning because she's on a little bit earlier, which makes it easier for me. Here's the choice cuts. The public wants to know how the lockdown will end. The plan man.
Why don't you trust people enough to tell them what it is that you're considering?
We do. We set out 5 tests. I set them out about 10 days ago, which said we're coming through the peak of this crisis, but until we've got, frankly, the death rate down, until we've got the infection rate down, until we can be confident that we don't end up precipitating a second peak in the virus, which would cause more deaths, which would damage the economy, which would result in a second lockdown. And as Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England, said this week, would actually result in a big blow, not just to the economy, but to public confidence. Until we can be confident, based on the scientific advice, that we'll make sure-footed steps going forward, which protect life, but also preserve our way of life. Frankly, it's not responsible to start speculating about the individual measures. And I read Nicola Sturgeon's Scottish Government report on this, and it's 25 pages long, and it sticks very carefully and consistently to the 5 tests that we've set out. And so we'll be guided by the scientific advice, and we want to make sure that as we approach the point at which we can make changes, we're guided by by the science and, as I said, overwhelmingly taking care of the health of the public, but also making sure we take sure-footed steps. I think anything else is irresponsible. And frankly, for all the other people that are saying that we should be setting out proposals in detail, I haven't actually seen any of those particular people suggesting specific things. And I think they're right not to at this stage, because until we've got the evidence from the scientists and the scientific groups, and also until we've tested what those proposals would, the impact they would have, I don't think it would be a responsible thing to do. It would only create more uncertainty in the public's mind when actually they need the reassurance that we're taking the right measures, as I said, based on the evidence at the right time.
Dominic Raab, you're that. But we want to know now, says Ridge. You know, the public are not stupid. We want to know now the types of things that you will do to ease this lockdown.
Isn't that a bit patronising, though, saying that it would just create more uncertainty for the public? I mean, the public have really followed the guidance. Surely they're intelligent enough to work out that what you're laying out isn't things that they can expect to do right now.
Well, actually, if you look at the public mood, it's overwhelmingly they're concerned that we might ease up too soon. But let me just give you an illustration. If we started proposing one or other measure that subsequently down the track we found out we couldn't implement, I think you'd be saying that we'd jump the gun. You'd be criticising us for that. And I think the public would be getting mixed messaging. So what we've said very clearly is we've set out the five tests for what the next transitional phase would look like. It won't be just going back, it will be a new normal, if you like, with social distancing measures adapted to areas which are currently closed off. And we'll make sure we're guided by the scientific evidence, and the scientists themselves have said, when I set out those five tests 10 days ago, they said easing up on any of the measures now would be dangerous and irresponsible. And they also said that in about 3 weeks' time from that point, so another couple of weeks, they'd have more evidence. And of course, the more we get the rate of deaths down, the more we get the rate of infections down, the greater flexibility we'll have. So we'll take the right decisions. But I just make this point, the Andrew Bailey, Governor of the Bank of England, made this point as well. If we take the wrong measures now, it's not just the risk to public health, also the risk to the economy, because we'd get a second spike, a second lockdown, and that would be a serious blow to public confidence. So we're going to take the right decisions at the right moment, and as I said, make sure the next step is a sure-footed one.
Let's hear more from Rab.
So why won't you publish that scientific advice, and even just the names of the scientists who are giving you the advice?
Well, Sage do release their advice subsequent, as normally about a couple of weeks down the track, so it's properly tested and carefully checked before being put out. We don't release, as a matter of practice, the names of all the members of Sage.
Wait for it. Why don't you release the names of the members of the scientists' advisory group to the government? Why don't you do that? Listen to his inverted answer. Staggering stuff, this.
We don't release, as a matter of practice, the names of all the members of Sage because the risk of them being subject to pressure, undue influence, things like that.
We don't release the names of the scientists on the Sage group because of the risk to them being put under undue influence. What a wonderful inversion. Of course, the truth is, we don't tell you who the scientists are who sit on Sage advising the government, because you would find out then who is really influencing those scientists, you see. It's an inversion. Wonderful. We keep their names a secret so that people won't try and influence them. No. You keep their names secret so that we don't find out who they really are and who their connections are. It's beautiful, this, isn't it? Isn't it? Again, Ridge could have jumped in there. Sophie, she's getting a bit of a kicking this morning, isn't she? She could have just jumped in and said, hang on a second, pal, you know? Because they're all connected, aren't they, to Bill Gates, aren't they? Let's be honest about it. All of them have received money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Oh, it's beautiful, this.
I don't think, Sophie, realistically, you can say there's been a lack of transparency. We've had the chief scientific advisor, Sir Patrick Vallance.
Sir Patrick Vallance, yes, who used to work for GlaxoSmithKline Beecham, yes.
The chief medical officer, Professor Chris Whitty, along with...
Chris Whitty, yes, who's taken money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and was about to take a new job at the World Health Organization, yes.
With politicians like me standing up on a daily basis, answering the questions,
wow,
setting out their advice and making sure that we communicate as clearly as possibly to the public what that advice is.
It's interesting saying that I'm saying that you're not being transparent. You were saying a bit earlier that if you did one thing, then journalists would criticise you. And look, I'll level you with you. You know, the poll out by Sky News last week showed that people trust politicians like you a lot more than journalists like me.
People trust politicians like you than they trust journalists like me. Well, that's because you don't do your job, Sophie. There is no trust in the media. Even people who go on to, I don't know, YouTube and who listen to shows like this and others, or I should say people who don't do that, people who get their news exclusively from The Guardian or The Mail or The Telegraph or whatever, even they're now beginning to completely lose faith and trust in the media. What an ironic thing to say that.
When it comes to these dealing with the coronavirus epidemic, but at the same time, you know, my job is to try and get answers. And it does feel like on some things we're not really sure what those answers are. You know, we don't know what the plan is or what the thinking is around the lockdown exit. We don't know who's on the committee of scientists. We don't get that scientific advice until it's slightly delayed. You know, you can't blame us for asking these questions. And it does feel as if there are some things that you're not telling us. Why not?
Jesus, did you hear that?
I don't blame you, Sophie. I've come on the show because I embrace that scrutiny. I've done the press conferences because it's critically important. We welcome Parliament getting back up and running responsibly with the social distancing and the technology to do it responsibly. We embrace that scrutiny. It's really important. I'm just also explaining to you, as along with the things that we have set out, why there are certain things that if we jump the gun, they would be irresponsible and precarious.
Yeah, and you heard him in the first clip, you heard him talking about the new normal. That seems to have been the message given to government ministers and opposition shadow ministers. They're all speaking with the same voice this morning, that we're entering a new normal. You'll hear a bit of it here. Again, we're sticking with the Ridge programme. She had everybody this morning. She interviewed Gina Radford, who's a former deputy chief medical officer, the country's former deputy chief medical officer. And Ridge speaks to her primarily about how the lockdown will end and ultimately when it will end. Gina Radford, former Deputy Chief Medical Officer in the UK.
Well, I think we need to be quite realistic about this. Firstly, we haven't at the moment got a vaccine, so we're having to start from scratch. We don't have a hugely good track record with vaccines for this particular virus, coronavirus, the family of viruses. But having said that, everything is being thrown at it. There are researchers all over the world trying to identify vaccines. So we've never seen anything like the effort that's being put to discover this vaccine. But even if we begin, as we have, to identify things that might possibly work, vaccines that have potential, then there's also the huge process of testing for their, firstly, whether they are effective, but also whether they're safe. Because there's no point developing a vaccine that actually is then going to cause more harm than it's trying to prevent. So, you know, I think those who are very used to the process of developing vaccine are saying that they're not anticipating this being available until well into next year. But having said that, we're fast-tracking, the government's fast-tracking some testing, for example, from Oxford. So you never know if that is successful. Maybe it'll be with us sooner. But then, of course, we've got to manufacture it to, you know, in the millions capacity.
Certainly not a quick process then, as you say. Now, I'm keen to ask your opinion on a report in the Mail on Sunday today as well.
Ridge just doesn't follow up on anything, does she? On anything. Your woman says fast-tracking, and Ridge could say, well, let's talk about the swine flu vaccine and the damage that did to people. Destroyed people's lives, like. Let's talk about Gardasil. Let's talk about the vaccines trialled on people in India by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and their cronies. She follows up on nothing. Fast-tracking. Well, that's a bit dangerous. She could have even ventured that much, you know? Well, hang on a second there. Radford, whatever your name is. Deputy, former Deputy Chief Medical Officer. Fast-tracking is a dangerous thing, no? No? No, she just ignores it.
As well, saying that some British scientists have developed these new immunity tests that the ministers have ordered 50 million of that could be ready in June. These are the tests that would effectively show whether you've already had COVID-19 and if you've developed immunity. Do you think that sounds realistic?
Very interesting. Ridge said, because we saw from the Sunday newspapers, the government might be able to produce 50 million units of a new test. The test would be that it would discover whether somebody has had the virus and if they've built up antibodies, if they are immune. So it's an immunity test. Okay? Good question. Now remember, the World Health Organization has been telling people over the weekend that this crazy deadly virus, you might not be able to be immune from it. I wonder, is the former Deputy Chief Medical Officer, is she on message, I wonder?
Stick.
Well, there are tests already available, and one of the issues is not whether, you know, not that there aren't tests available, it's actually how accurate they are. And so Public Health England have already been testing some and what we call antibody tests. And unfortunately, quality control measures are not such that they are reliable. So whether this test is more reliable, we will have to see. But the other issue, we need to put...
The other issue now?
This whole question of immunity in a little bit of perspective.
Put the question of immunity in a bit of perspective. Dear listeners, I'll give you the Cliff Note version of immunity as best as I can. It's been years since I studied biology. When something attacks your immune system, your body fights back and eventually builds up antibodies against it. And you heal, and then your body, this is real basic shit now, has a memory of it. And if it comes back in the same form, your body will be able to say, no, you ain't coming in today. That's basic 101, day one biology, right? But this virus is special, you know. And they're not even talking about mutations now, which they could make an argument for. They're talking about the virus itself. COVID-19. This is horse manure dumped onto Sky News. It's unprecedented. And no challenge from the presenter. Listen.
Perspective. We don't yet have evidence, strong evidence, that if you've had coronavirus, this particular strain, you are immune to getting it again. We don't know, you know, what levels of antibody response are required and how long the antibodies stay in the body.
So, and the reason I'm saying that is because I'm a paid whore for Big Pharma. We want you not only to get a vaccine when we bring one out, but we want you to get boosters every 6 months. You see? That's what we want to do. Here's the vaccine for coronavirus 19. Right? But you'll have to have a top-up every 6 months. And the only way we can keep track of that is if we give you the vaccine, if we administer it on your arm, using the new patch, which will leave a digital, indelible digital mark that can be scanned and read by phones and tablets and cameras. Yeah.
We don't know a lot about what it means if we do find antibodies in people, how long that's going to last. So that's why the government have set up another research program to monitor a large number of people over a long time to see what happens to the antibodies in their body.
We want to monitor a large number of people over a long time. And the military will be of great assistance in rolling that program out, won't it? 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Oh. They spell it out together, the journalist and the health expert, working beautifully in tandem. Here they talk about the lockdown. Have a listen.
Listen to what you say. It does feel as if the lockdown or some measures of social distancing will be here for a long time.
Long time.
To come. Now, of course, I know that what measures to ease and when is a political decision. But would you be able to shed any light on the kind of things that the government is likely to be weighing up?
Well, firstly, whatever happens, I anticipate that the lockdown will be lifted in stages. It's not going to be suddenly everyone's back to normal. And I think the message is getting through to people that for many of us, we're in this for the longer term. But they'll be looking at, firstly, what's actually going on in the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, who are ahead of us in terms of the epidemic curve. And we've seen, for example, that what tends to happen is things like small businesses being opened first, if they can safely socially distance. And social distancing is the key. So whether we would look at different types of business, maybe also different parts of the country, and also things like schools, whether we can let children go back, but in a very safe way. So maybe reducing the numbers in a class, maybe having some classes going back 1 week, another class going back another week, and their schooling being supplemented by the continuing of online classes. So I think that the key message is that whatever happens, this is going to be a staged process.
Mm. It's unimaginably evil, isn't it, this? Isn't it? It is unimaginably evil. I was speaking to my oft-mentioned Cora McCora, Jean-Ann Crowley, who's based in Connemara these days, famously, and has an amazing life there, Jean-Ann. And I was talking to her the other day. We chat regularly, and I said, I'm not one for light bulb overhead moments, me, you know. I'm not being falsely modest here, because I'm not modest. I'm not a boastful type person either. I'm not a braggart or you know, one of them type of people. You know, people always sending themselves flowers. I'm somewhere in the middle. Try and keep an even keel on things. I don't have brainwaves too often. But you see this thing about, we'll stage manage things. I believe in the very, very near future, we're going to be told. I really believe this. And this is going to be part of this tackling climate change agenda too. In the near future, we're going to be told certain postcodes can travel on Sundays. So I'm in the Manchester postcode, right? I used to be in the M14 area. Now I'm in a Salford postcode, which also begins with M. I think they're going to say, on certain Sundays of the month, you lot can travel, but the rest of you have got to stay fairly close to home and travel on foot and maintain a social distancing thing for this Sunday, for the 26th of April. And the next Sunday, you can get into your car with your family and travel down the country if you like, but you can't do that all the time. I think they're introducing these concepts, and they're not concepts that are going to be used to deal with coronavirus. They're going to be introduced as a way of tackling so-called man-made anthropogenic climate change as well. Watch this space. This is what's coming down the line. This is why I talked about conditioning earlier on. To have the army rock up, men and women getting out of army lorries to run medical tests on people, is a fucking outrage and an affront to the notion of freedom. It's anti-fucking freedom to send the army around to test people. Isn't it? Isn't it? And here you have some fucking bitch who used to be the deputy chief medical officer telling people that some types of businesses will be allowed to reopen and others won't. Some of you will just have to face bankruptcy, losing everything you fucking have, your house, your family, your marriages, and ultimately maybe your life, because we say it's the right thing to do. That's where we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. That's where we're going. I'm a little bit fatigué, as the French say. Fatigué. I'm a little bit tired this morning. But don't listen to me, whinge. We're all fucking tired of this. That's where it's going. On certain Sundays of the month, you can travel. Other Sundays, you can't. And I fear, and while I don't have brainwaves very often, I'm of above average intelligence. I know I am. You know I am. And I know you are. You wouldn't be here otherwise, listening to something different. I know one thing for sure. There will be no opposition to it. Nobody. Because all you've got left in 2020 is Peter Hitchens in the Mail on Sunday and one or two other commentators in the commentariat who sometimes manage somehow to get onto the national airwaves. But for the most part, they're kept away from the national airwaves. So I think the people will just embrace it. They'll say, fair enough. Think of the children. Won't somebody please think of the children? It's the children's future we should all be worried about. We want to have a world left for them. And we don't want them to die of all of these viruses at the same time. So yes, why not? I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, how often do you go to the country anyway, you big baldy bastard? Well, that's not the fucking point, is it? If I go to the countryside once a month with my missus and our dogs, or if I go fucking six times a month, that's my business, right? I railed against for years listening to independent radio shows, the fear porn shows. And I railed against them and criticised them and critiqued them. Now, I'm not rolling back that criticism because it was justified for the most part. People peddling fear and then charging you for fucking super male vitality pills or whatever the hell, right? But this is happening. It's happening. There would have been a time when you wouldn't have said, you wouldn't have had the balls to say what she just said there on the BBC. Certain businesses, they just won't be able to open back up again. You'd be running for the hills with a trail of employees and employers and union people running after you. It's mad, this, isn't it? It's mad. Do you know what I can't wait for? I can't wait for Mark Bajerski. He's going to be on with me tomorrow on Monday's Richie Allen radio show, and he's a top man.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
So I'm looking forward to that. Mark drops in tomorrow for the first time in ages. I'm really looking forward to that. Mark Bajerski with me tomorrow. The question keeps being posed to me by people who are new to this type of program, right? And the question they keep posing is, and Jean Anne has reminded me, she's just sent me a message. The question is, or it's a statement, a question framed as a statement. Yeah, it's usually a question framed as a statement, right? And it goes something like, I'd have believed or I'd have thought that Boris Johnson or even Jeremy Corbyn or even Angela Merkel wouldn't have fallen for this. You know, that they wouldn't have rolled over and allowed this. But the problem is, you have to begin to entertain the idea that you don't get to become the foreign secretary, let alone the health secretary, let alone the prime minister, or even to lead one of the UK's main political parties. You don't get to do that unless there's a gun to your head. unless you're compromised in some way. I mean, how can people not see that? You know? How can people not grasp that as a concept? That all of these people are somehow compromised. It could be corruption. It could be financial malfeasance. Could be money laundering. It could be sexual in nature. It could be crimes against children. I'm not saying it is for any specific politician. I'm not saying that. But these are the things. Do you not remember many years ago when David Shaler went on the run with Annie Machon? One of the things they said was that MI5 had filing cabinets of information on not only the government of the day, which was the Labour Party, Tony Blair's Labour Party, but anybody in public life. Jesus, J. Edgar Hoover, anybody. You don't get to hold an office like that unless those who really control what happens know that you are under the thumb. That you're not going to do or say anything that's going to upset or to even impede the agenda, the progress of it. Of course they're compromised. As I said, money, corruption, business, malfeasance, affairs, you know, a fondness for children, it could be anything. What do you think fucking Jeffrey Epstein was doing? What do you think Epstein was doing with his houses and apartments wired for sound and probably hotels, probably? What do you think he was doing on behalf of his masters? He was gathering a treasure trove of evidence to be used against people if they ever had the balls to say, hang on a second, something is very, very wrong here. So Boris Johnson knows. He knows it's a stone-cold fact that the coronavirus is a hoax. He knows this to be true. He knows the Nightingale hospitals are empty. He knows that people are being written off as having died of coronavirus when in fact they were being treated in hospital for acute renal failure. Or their liver was shot to fucking pieces. Or they've had 25 heart attacks in the last 5 years and have had a heart transplant. He knows this. What's he going to do? Going to come on television, take the lectern and say, do you know what, folks? It's all a pack of lies. He can't do that. Because somebody makes a phone call and says, get me the Johnson file. That's how it works. You're living in a fascist state where you have the media in bed with the political class lying through their teeth every second of the day to justify locking people into their homes, threatening people with exorbitant fines and prison if those fines are not paid for going outside in the fresh air and meeting their friends. It's a tyranny. It's not conjecture. There isn't a debate to be had here. It's a tyranny. I see Piers Corbyn was in Glastonbury. Yesterday, was he? Was it yesterday? Was it Friday? Was it yesterday at a protest? Piers, there was 50 or so people there. He had a megaphone and he was giving a few home truths to the passers-by. Namely, it's a load of bollocks. And the police turned up, issued some threats and told him they'd have to move on. It's a tyranny. His tyrannical government and its stormtroopers in the Metropolitan Police Forces all around the country are now telling people you can't protest. If you don't move on, we'll lock you up. It's mad. And much will people take? Do you know what? They'll take as much as you can give them. They'll take as much as you can give them, and then they'll say, please, sir, can I have some more? Listen to the first 15 minutes of this programme again. It's fucking vaudeville. It is fucking vaudeville. Never one to over-egg the pudding, me. But you know.
I know you've been doing some shifts in the Nightingale Hospital in London. What's the situation been like most recently?
The setup that they have at the Nightingale is phenomenal. We spend the day phoning patients' families, and I've been a doctor for many years, but there is nothing more heartbreaking than delivering the very worst of news over the phone.
Yeah, we spend our day phoning people and telling them that their loved ones have passed away in the Nightingale.
Cases have started to come down according to the official figures. I just wonder if that's been your experience working in A&E on the front line. I mean, there have been reports as well that the Nightingale Hospital in London has been largely empty.
Look. Yeah, it's empty, as is the one in Manchester. Listen, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 5. Mark Bajerski will be my guest. Bye for me, bye now.
When you're down.